Hey everybody, and welcome to the show. I'm James, that's Katie, and that makes this the first ever episode number 17 of Cloud Control, the gaming podcast. It's not just good, it's good enough. And I'm here with a lovely cup of red tea on this lovely evening, here to record, talk about some games. Hey Kate, welcome again. What's up?
Oh, well, clearly I'm not as cozy as you are. I was in such a rush to get home, I didn't even make a cup of tea, and now I feel foolish.
How the tables turn. We can pause the podcast for a second if you want. We can all wait here. You can go make some tea. What do you think?
No. There's far too many exciting things to do tonight, because we gotta record this podcast, and then we gotta watch The Last of Us. So it is a prep to be a good evening.
Exactly. There's a lot going on, so let's get right to it. We are recording, like you said, just a bit of housekeeping at the start. We are watching The Last of Us together, and we're recording podcasts to review every episode that we watch. So you can check that out on our same feeds you're getting this show on. We just decided to separate it out so the show isn't just dominated by The Last of Us, the TV show, which is excellent, and you should all watch it and then listen to our reviews, okay? Deal. Okay, next thing is we are now supporting the Canadian Red Cross with our subscription program. For those of you that do that through Anchor, thank you so much. If you don't do that already, if you have an extra dollar a month, you can support us through Anchor. Follow the links on that website there, and you can help us donate money to the Canadian Red Cross for the entirety of 2023, which is something we thank you very much for the ability to do. Okay, so for the show today, we're going to have a nice, concise little show. We're going to talk about the Xbox Developer Showcase, or Developer Direct, I think they call it. Oh, hi, Neville. Welcome back to the show again. Two for two the last couple of weeks.
Two for two. He's on board. He's really embracing his mascot role.
All right. So we're going to talk about the Developer Direct, and after that, I've been playing Hi-Fi Rush, so that'll lead in together nicely, and then at the end of the show, I have developed a lovely quiz for Kate. We're returning to the quiz, one of our all-time favorite segments, so look out for that and play along at the end of the show. But for now, Kate, something I did not watch in its entirety was the Xbox Developer Direct. I've seen bits and pieces, but take it away. How did you think of the show, and what were your takeaways?
Well, elephant in the room, let's just get it out of the way. There was no Silk Song news.
I knew that's why you were so interested in watching it.
You hear Xbox Direct at this point, and that's the first place my mind goes. I mean, this was fun. I think it was a good Direct. The one thing about it is, like, I always get excited about the Xbox stuff because they tend to do a lot of indies. Like, historically, a lot of the, like, Microsoft Day at E3 would be a lot of indies, and all, like, you know, they were known for that, like, rapid-fire pace for a while. But this is very much a different kind of approach here, so it was four games that I think they even announced ahead of time that we were going to see. And then there was a surprise fifth one, which ended up being Hi-Fi Rush. So they went through kind of their four biggest games coming out soon, and then kind of broke them down and had a lengthy look at each one, with the development studios actually getting some time to discuss their process and how they, like, came about making the games. So they weren't necessarily games that I'm particularly interested in, but I just really like that deep dive, kind of longer look at some of, especially some of the bigger titles, where they get a little bit more time to breathe on screen.
Yeah, I agree too. Like, it's like when Sony does those specific game directs, I'm almost more state of play, and it's almost more fun to, like, oh, I'm really excited to learn about God of War. Like, I can't wait to watch this one, rather than getting that sort of rapid fire and you don't get a lot of information. And then you're Googling around about, like, oh, that game looked cool, but, like, we didn't see a lot of it. So I like the format too.
And I would say the one downside is, I guess if you're not really excited about any of the games in particular, it might not be the most interesting to watch, instead of, like, the quantity you're going to hit at least a couple that appeal to you in some way. But I just think it's neat, like, even they're not my cup of tea, like, it's just I love that process of, like, you know, the passion of how it gets turned from an original idea into finally it's a video game and the technical achievements. And so I say it's a fun watch. But yeah, I guess we'll go through it quickly, the games they had. So first up, they had Minecraft Legends, which is, like, a PvP, but it's co-op, and it's just this, like, it's crazy how much Minecraft has evolved at this point. To, like,
yeah, it is.
It's not even a mode within Minecraft. It's its own standalone, like, base building, like, raiding each other's strongholds, like, getting your group together to defend yours, and then go out online and, like, try to take over some people's bases and stuff. So There's a lot of stuff going on, and of course the game looks phenomenal. Like, it's crazy how Minecraft is now just the benchmark of like how good can games look in that like sense of just polish.
I know, it's crazy. It almost is like Xbox is like, okay, Minecraft, keep this kind of lo-fi, low poly kind of game, but instead just crank up all the settings around it, like make the lighting just look as beautiful and polish everything to a sheen, and just how good can we make this sort of Lego look. And you're right, it's kind of interesting because I remember back in the day people would always play those like modded sort of versions of Minecraft where they'd have all the different game modes, and now it's like Microsoft is finally coming back with Mojang and being like, okay, we're gonna make our own versions of these games, and then start to like really expand upon it. And it is crazy, you're right, it's like Roblox almost, or one of those games where it's like people just play that in that universe, and that's the entire thing. And you can totally see it with the variety they've had. They had like that like dungeon crawling Minecraft game a few years ago as well, right? And then this one, so they're doing it.
RPG with like casting spells and stuff. Yeah. Like, they've done everything. Like, I think we're both kind of in the same boat where neither of us really got into Minecraft. We were maybe a couple years too old for when it really hit big.
Yeah.
Like, I remember trying it out when I was like, you know, I want to say like 15-ish or something, and just it didn't really appeal to me.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing for us too is like we don't really jive with like the open world sort of crafting, collecting your components, and that was like an essence of what the original Minecraft was. So it's no wonder it didn't suck us in from the beginning.
Yeah. That is absolutely true. Like, it's just a product of, you know, maybe not the best timing, and then also just not our cup of tea. But I can only imagine how like exciting this must be. Like, I almost compare this, and I wonder if this is true, but my assumption of this kind of thing is like Pokemon for us, where it's like, oh, Pokemon's evolved, there's a new thing, and like we're just so like nostalgic for that world. Whereas I feel like a lot of like young people a bit younger than us have that same kind of feeling for Minecraft, and it's sort of expanding in a similar way.
I think you're probably right. I think it's a smaller overall section just because Pokemon's such a juggernaut, but I think obviously it's the same principle. And yeah, there's probably a ton of people in that boat. So good for you guys.
Yeah, Minecraft Legends. Get your creeper hoodies on, because everyone's got the hoodie, right? Where it's the green with just the face.
Yeah, of course.
Put that on. So the next one is definitely a game I will never play, but some of my favorite trailers to watch. And this was the new Forza Motorsport, because I can never get over how impressive these racing games are. Like, I don't know if it's because the scope is so limited, like you just have the cars and the tracks, and like there's nothing else that the game needs to interact with. So it gives them, it frees up the resources to be able to work on other aspects of the game. But the visuals and the sound design in these racing games is always astounding. Like, if you watch this trailer, like, I don't care if you're not into racing. I'm not into racing. I don't care about cars. But looking at this trailer, it's like watching real footage of like an F1 event sometimes. It's outrageous.
Yeah, it is crazy what they can do. And your feelings are exactly how I feel. I wonder how, like, I just compare it to, like, you know how Madden or FIFA and all those games take a lot of flack every year because it's like they're putting out the same game and they don't really iterate too much on it. And I feel like this is kind of a step up from that, where they do put out Forza, but they always alternate between like the motorsport, the GP one, like this one, and then they do the Forza, the one I was playing on Xbox, which is more like the, you know, burnout style one where you can go off road and do kind of crazy things. And I wonder if that like staggered release allows them just to step up the quality on each one just that little bit more, and really put this fine tuning into it that you don't see from other games that are sort of iterative. And it really seems to make a difference, though.
Point, because these ones definitely don't fall under that same line of fire that other sports games do for just like having that consistent release. Even though, like, you know, I think they were saying there's like 15 maps or something, and only 5 are new. The others are returning. But nobody ever has anything bad to say about Forza, right? Because like, it's just, they're doing so many things they don't need to do. Like, they do not need to have a realistic, star accurate day and night cycle that actually syncs up with the place you are in the world and the map. Like, nobody would know that that was a thing if they just sat down to play it for an afternoon. But that's the kind of stuff that the developers put in the game, and I personally think it I don't know, it adds a lot to me, or at least like it is a hook that draws me in to be interested about the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's beyond the game itself, it's the technical aspects of it, right? Mm-hmm. It's like why people, it's like how we were just saying we appreciate Minecraft and the way that it always looks so nice, even mm-hmm. though we don't, I mean, similar, obviously not as impressive as what Forza is doing, but you know what I mean. It's something.
It's the Red Dead Redemption thing, you yeah. know? Like, do the horse testicles really need to shrink in when it's cold outside? Maybe, no. Maybe not. But once you know about it, does it make you smile every time? Yes, it does.
It's the little details, you know? It's the little things.
The little things. It's the little things. You know, just all the love and care that goes into making some of these games. Which will take us to the next one. I think this is probably one that was on a lot of people's radar because we've seen a lot of it shown off at various different E3s and conferences, and this is of course Redfall.
Now just to interrupt you for a second right there. Yeah. Redfall approaching our first Deathloop award winner of a game that's just been shown a lot of times before it comes out and maybe needs to be awarded with something. I want to propose this to you because we've been talking about this for a while and we've yet to find a subject. I thought Forspoken might have been it too, but Forspoken did come out recently, so Redfall is yeah. a candidate.
You know what? I think Redfall so far is our leading game for the Deathloop Award of just we've seen it so many times and it's not out yet.
Okay. How about this? If it shows mm-hmm. up again before it comes out on May 2nd, it's the winner.
Yes, I think so. Because there was 10 minutes of gameplay in this Redfall demo. And I will be honest, I don't think they showed anything that I haven't already seen before based on the previous iterations. And if anything, I almost think it felt a little bit stripped back because they showed a lot of gameplay. But one of the things I remember about Redfall from the beginning, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I really got the impression it was sort of trying to be one of those shooters where you picked a character and the character had a lot of personality, right? Like, I think one of the early trailers was a story trailer that kind of showed off, like, you know, this person's a tech guy and he's got like one of those Boston Dynamics dogs and it like can taunt or distract enemies while you shoot them, and like, you know, this other girl's the sniper and she's got whatever else going on. But in this one they had 10 minutes of gameplay and they definitely have characters that have different abilities, but I got basically like zero personality. Like, there wasn't really any of the voice lines which were common in the other trailers that we thought maybe were a little too much anyway, but it wasn't really present. So I'm wondering if they kind of scaled some of that aspect of the game back, or if they just really wanted to focus on gameplay and didn't want anything else getting in the way.
That's really interesting. I didn't pick up on that myself. Yeah, you know what? That is interesting. I feel like it did have a lot more of a serious tone without those vibes. Hey, Neville, what's going on, buddy? Yeah. You know what? I'd have to go back and rewatch it. But which do you think is a better tone for the game? Do you think it's better with that goofy tone, or is the more serious nature thing to its benefit?
So here's my problem with Redfall. Oh my God, and Neville, calm down. By the way, I'm sorry if it's loud in the background. Neville decided it's fucking playtime. So there's a monster cat just running around my house. But anyway, so Redfall to me looks like it needs to commit to something. Because right now, and I will admit that I'm not necessarily the most versed in this genre of game, but it looks like the kind of stuff that's like, it's fun to play with a group of friends and you fight a bunch of monsters and you kill things and, you know, it's like a little hoardy maybe, and then there's bosses and whatever and you're just shooting, having a fun time. But Redfall to me seems like it can't quite decide what it wants to do and it's not really committing to anything. Like, it's kind of got the vampire aesthetic going on, which could be cool, but it doesn't really like stand out in that way. And then it's kind of had like the quirky characters, but like now they just seem a little bit generic, and I just don't really know where Redfall, like, where its main appeal is, as opposed to playing one of the other 37 games in this genre.
Yeah, it's interesting how I feel like it's becoming a lot more just be like a looter shooter, and that I got the vibe from this one, whereas in the earlier games, I think it was more about, maybe I forgot about the characters' personalities, but it was more focused on like, oh, I can make a platform and you can jump up on it and then I'll shield you while you do this ability. And this trailer seemed more like you're picking up the weapons and focused on the arsenal of guns. And maybe they're just trying to show off different information. But I definitely think the more this goes down, you know, that type of loot focused route, or that type of setting, it's just becoming like Borderlands, right? And at that point, maybe that's why they were trying to differentiate it with the humor, because Borderlands is very quippy and loud. Maybe they were like, you know what, this is going to be a lot of people's competition for this. We're going to go for a different tone. But you're right. that's contradictory too, because I wouldn't say that this stands out as being overly vampire in its theming either, like with the bright colors and the different abilities. I'm told it's a vampire game, so I know it, but I don't think I could have picked up on that, like you said. So yeah, you're right. It's got a few different identities it's trying to go for.
Yeah, and I just feel like there's so many of these games that come out. I mean, like, if it's on Game Pass, like, it definitely could be a fun, like, everyone pick it up for a night and play. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's really many of this genre that you can have a bad time with as long as you've got a good group. But I just don't know if I'd really pick it up over, like, Vermintide, or there was that other, like, more horror-based one that just that you had played. Read something else as well, I think. Fire something? I don't know.
Aliens Fire Team? I played that.
Yeah, Aliens Fire Team. Yeah, like those ones stand out as just having a little bit more of like an immediate appeal. But I don't know. It's Arkane. Arkane's always a reputable studio. So.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Is like that's the one thing that I'm kind of holding out hope for. Not that I'm really like I wouldn't have put this on my most excited for list or something like that. But the fact that it is Arkane is exciting to me. Although up until now, like at least the experience I've had is because of the versatility and how you could play those games single player and kind of move your way through the world and sneak around and upgrade your skill trees and stuff. And with a more action focused game, I wonder if that will translate, because as good as Arkane is, I wouldn't say that the feeling of the combat is the best thing about their games, at least from what I played. And if this is more combat focused, then I don't know if that's the best use of their talent, but that's judging a book before we've read it. So we can't do that. I hope it's good though, because it seems good. It seems like a cool idea. Yeah.
And we will judge it on the next three trailers it gets before May 2nd. So we'll maybe pause on that for now.
That's right.
I'm going to skip over exciting game number 4 on the list and go just to 5, because we'll definitely get back to Hi-Fi Rush. But the other big thing that they had coming out of the ZeniMax is the next Elder Scrolls Online chapter, which is called Necrom. Coming out in June, so it's in Morrowind, which is pretty cool, because that was, I think, the first like Elder Scrolls game that kind of blew up, and is still really nostalgic for a lot of people. So we're going to Morrowind, and there's a new class called the Arcanist, which seems pretty fun. I think Elder Scrolls Online is a fantastic game. Like, I'm not an MMO person, and I have only played a very little amount of it. But I can confidently say if I was going to get into an MMO that isn't Destiny, it would be Elder Scrolls Online without question.
Interesting.
It is a
over
fun
FF16.
Game. Over FF. Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think just this looks cool. Like, if you're into Elder Scrolls, you're into Elder Scrolls. Like, I think you already know if you're excited about this or not, but it looks like a really cool chapter. And I've never been to Morrowind, so.
I mean, my interest in going to Morrowind or anything Elder Scrolls is probably about as low as it could be, but I'm really happy for the people that love Morrowind, and I hope they have fun playing as the Arcanist, because I sure will be doing something else.
Wow. Anyway, let's talk about something we're excited about, I guess.
Yeah.
Clearly it's not this. The last thing they showed, so this was the second last thing, if you're watching it chronologically, but this was Hi-Fi Rush, which was a total surprise. I think this was its very first showing. And
it was, yeah. Shadow Drop.
And so it's Tango Gameworks, which made The Evil Within and Ghostwire Tokyo. So you're thinking, okay, kind of like creepy horror, like maybe some shooting, maybe some like melee combat. And they're like, no, actually, we made a rhythm action game with like a cartoony, almost like comic book kind of styling to it. And then they're like, hey, you guys heard of Nintendo? Well, guess what? We've heard of them too. And this game is out right friggin' now. So I was watching it with someone and I paused. When they said it's out now, I paused the video. I got up. I went to my computer and started downloading this on Game Pass. Then sat back down and said, okay, we can keep watching.
Smart move. It's a smart move.
Holy shit. It looks so incredibly good. Like, everything about this trailer lands, like the art style, the way the characters move, the humor in it, like the whole concept design of like playing an RPG through the music, and you have to be on beat, but then also like the music adjusts based on what you're doing. Like, you have to tell me more about this game, because right now I have nothing but like, this is a 10 out of 10 hype experience.
Okay, well, I mean, I've played quite a bit of it now. I've played, I think, the first I'd say probably about 4.5 hours or so I've played of the game. So definitely, I think about halfway from what I've heard online. It's about 10 hours or so. So yeah, it's an interesting game. And I definitely think it's cool to be playing this so quickly after Metal Hellsinger, because that's another game that immediately, I know you and I were like, oh, another action rhythm-based game. And for what I would say about this one is I feel like it's definitely, for all the way it's advertised in that trailer, I would say it's a lot less overall about the rhythm than Hellsinger was. And I don't know if it's, I don't think it's a bad thing. And the rhythm is still very important, but like for Hellsinger, I just felt it was a lot more punishing if you're to miss the beat. Like it's very crucial to get that meter up and get stronger. And in this, I think it's a lot more forgiving on the beats. Like your attacks will still happen if you miss. You just get a power up if you hit the beat and whatnot. So the music element is, I would say, a little bit less emphasized. And especially in the fact that Hellsinger is so tuned to like this level is about this song and you have your headphones in and it's all about that music. And the music is the number one dominant thing that you're listening to. Whereas in this game, there's a lot of voiceover and the characters are kind of quipping back and forth. And there's like sound effects of different robots and they're yelling at you at like enemies and whatnot. And the music isn't quite as emphasized, I wouldn't say. And also the licensed song, they had the Black Keys and a few other bands. But those are usually during like a certain sequence of the game. And the rest of the music for each level is done by an in-house band. So it's still like, it's still good music, but it's not like so emphasized with the licensed music like Hellsinger. So I just want to say that off the top, music-wise, because I know a lot of people might have different expectations. But aside from that, this game is friggin' awesome. It is so much fun to play. The story quickly is just about this main character, Chai, that you play. He's actually voiced by the same guy that does Akechi in Persona 5. When I looked it up, no, he does not yet eat any pancakes, but it's an interesting performance. I feel like the writing itself is kind of, it's a little bit too like one-linery for me at times, but for the most part, it does hit and it's pretty funny. And the story basically is this guy, he's gone to this sort of mechanizing facility where they replace different parts of people's bodies with robotic parts to help them work at this factory better. And it's basically like this dystopian area. And he comes in, he's kind of a klutz. He comes in, he's going to get a robotic implant and he falls into this conveyor belt and gets his iPod slammed into his chest, kind of like an Iron Man battery, but it's an iPod. And so from that moment on, everything moves to the beat, including him. He's tapping his feet, like the world just, he perceives everything on beat, and that's why you have to attack that certain way. So that's really fun. The game itself, like it really reminds me of so many different games. And I was saying this to, like, I forget who I was talking to, but I was like, I don't know if there's a game that reminds me of so many different games all at once. Like it's very Persona and kind of in like the characters and presentation and like the way the speech bubbles come up at the bottom and the characters like an anime style. Like it looks very Persona in that way, but it's a lot like other sort of mascot platformers as well. Like there's a lot of collectibles to pick up off the ground. You know, there's like bolts that are kind of like coins and you can spend them on different things. It's like No More Heroes-y to me. Some Metal Hellsinger obviously with the beat. And then there's some other like sort of quick time areas, but I would say it's almost like an Elite Beat Agents thing, if you've ever played that before. A lot of things going on. And of course there's this cat too that is a complete ripoff of Morgana, and they're trying to incorporate that as well. So you're kind of attacking to the beat. Like I said, you have an X and Y is like light and heavy attacks, and as you go you can spend those coins to unlock more different combos. So you can do like X X Y, or like, you know, change it up and you get different attacks, and some of them are pretty cool. Like you can attack like waves will come out of your guitar, or like you can shoot this giant beam at the ground if you combo this right way in the air. Like they're pretty visually pleasing to get to, and you can unlock them reasonably quickly as well, because I think the game does have a nice clip to it. It's very, you know, snappy and you don't stay with one thing too long, so I think it's progressing nicely with those type of abilities. And I would say overall I'm just excited to play more. You know, there's a grapple, there's a parry system you'll be happy to hear. If you make it to the third level, you'll unlock the parry system. So play at least that far to see what you think.
I'm in.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because, of course, the parries happen on beats as well. Like the enemies' animations all happen on the beat at this as well as yours. So you can kind of parry. Like I'm finding it a lot easier to parry in this game than certain other ones, because as long as you know the beat of what's going on, you know when to press the button, which is a interesting wrinkle in terms of this. And, you know, I was thinking about this and I wanted to pose this question to you. So another game, this is kind of like, it is very character action focused, kind of like a Devil May Cry Bayonetta style. But the difference is it layers that music element on top. And for someone like you, I know that really skews, we're talking about that radar of, or the range of like Bloodborne to Devil May Cry or whatever, and like the different styles. I feel like this is a really interesting way to have some sort of skill ceiling put on top of a game that's more on the action platformer style. So I wonder if this is what's going to make you appreciative of a game like this. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the music aspect is a hook regardless. Like, I'm glad you brought up Hellsinger because that's what it was likened to for me, because I love rhythm games, but I find that there are not many that come out and are like in a different kind of genre. Like, there's not tons of crossover, right? Like, a lot of rhythm games you get and they're tons of fun, but they tend to be the like the notes coming towards you, and once it gets to a certain part on the screen you hit the button accordingly, or you know, they tend to just be that kind of style. But Hellsinger was very unique because, well, we'd really had like a shooter rhythm game, right? Or you get something like, I was thinking like Crypt of the Necrodancer, like that's kind of like a roguelike kind of music style game. But putting that aspect into other genres is just not something, at least that I've seen much of before. And so this is kind of the first of this style I've seen. And absolutely, like, I think there's a lot going for it. Like, obviously the presentation is really beautiful. And I think I would be interested in the game regardless, just as like a kind of arcade fun, like short experience that's maybe not necessarily super deep, but just really like enticing the entire way through. But that music aspect definitely pushes it over the top and makes it a priority for me. And yeah, I think I like games where I can kind of challenge myself a little bit. And so I think it's fantastic that you don't have to be unbeaten. It's not as punishing, because it definitely seems like the kind of game that's supposed to just be like, I wish there was a better way to say it other than like a Nintendo style, where it's like fun comes first and then the other stuff comes after. But it's kind of got that essence of like arcadey, kind of like we did fun first and then built the rest of the game around it. Mm-hmm. And we just want you to have like a big smile on your face as you're playing the entire time. We don't want you to get stuck. We don't want you to get bogged down. We want you just to zoom through it and have a blast. Mm-hmm. So I think it seems like it's that kind of a game. So I think it doesn't work as well as Hellsinger to be very punishing. It doesn't really fit the setting, but I like that I can still kind of like challenge myself and try to be really precise, because it lets me sort of like have my cake and eat it too with combining multiple styles of games that I'm interested in.
Yeah, and it is really approachable. Like, there, I think there's 4 difficulty settings when you go on there, and I'm just playing on the default one, whatever it starts you off. And I've died a few times as I've gotten kind of towards these later few levels, and that is like the one complaint I would say, if there's anything to patch into this game, is like, it's not necessarily like they checkpoint it really well. Like, if you die in a boss fight or like a big room of enemies, like, you get usually checkpointed right before. But if there's any kind of dialogue or cutscene going on before the encounter, that you have to sit through it, you can't skip it. So there's like this one I'm on right now, and like this boss, like, she does this big speech, and then this robot thing comes down, these doors open, and I'm just like sitting there and wanting to button through it, you know, and you can't. So that's the one thing I would say, which is sort of annoying, but. All in all, I totally recommend this game. It is an amazing drop just to get out of nowhere. And I'm definitely going to play this. I might talk about it again when I beat it. We'll see. It depends if any other crazy things kind of happen, because there are some other characters you meet that I won't spoil. I know they're in the cover art of the game. You might have seen their art. Their names are actually really cool. So it's Chai is the main character. Peppermint is the girl. And then the other guy I just met is Macaron. So I think they're all based off like coffee house sort of flavors.
Like, kind of neat kind of style stuff.
So it's kind of a neat little theme, but some cool little abilities you get, and you can all combo it together with your moves too. So yeah, I'm gonna keep playing. I recommend you check it out. I think you'll really enjoy it.
I'm definitely gonna check it out. I think next time we talk about it on the show, I may not have beaten it, but I will definitely have played and
That's what happened to me. You know, I started playing this game and I was like, all right, I just beat whatever it was I talked last time. I'm going to start Plague Tale, and I got Pokemon. I'm going to play them back to back. They're like so good to go together. I can play them at the same time. And then what do I end up playing? I drop both of them and start playing Hi-Fi Rush. So this is how it goes sometimes.
I mean, sometimes those surprise drops, like, you just got to get on it right away, right?
That's
like,
right. That's right. It was too exciting not to.
That opportunity has presented itself. You must grasp it.
That's right. Okay, well, let's get to our next topic here, because I have set up the quiz today to be a wonderful experience for you, because we haven't done one of these in quite a while. So for those that are new to the show, sometimes we like to set up a little quiz for each other, and it can be about a variety of different topics. We've had some really funny ones, like matching bad game reviews to certain games. What were the other ones we've done in the past that are just...
There was one you did, and it was like, is this a...
K-pop band, or...
Yeah, I was like, is it a JRPG boss or a K-pop band? And it was, like, impossibly difficult.
Okay.
But yeah, probably the best business that's ever happened in the history of the show.
All right, well, let's get to this one today. I've named this one the Sidekick Spectacular, because it is themed after some questions about... sidekick characters, or like side characters in games. And it's more of a standard trivia sort of quiz. So in spirit of that, I've given you some multiple choice answers, just because it's not super impossible. And of course, if you want to play along with us and see how you do, and if you can beat Kate's score, let us know in the comments section on our YouTube channel, and we'll see who can do the best.
Good luck.
Good luck. All right, so question one. The Rabbids have gained new notoriety in recent years after teaming up with Mario for Kingdom Battle and Sparks of Hope. The Rabbids, of course, though, have a number of other different games they've starred in, but which of these three is not a real Rabbids game? So two of these are real, one is not. Is the fake game A, Rabbids Coding, B, Rabbids Rumble, or C, Rabbids Wrestling?
See, already I've overthought this and become stressed, because you see, Rabbids Coding is absolutely hilarious if you made that up. And like, I don't know if rabbits are necessarily educational, because all they do is cause mischief. But at the same time, that just sounds like some dumb like kids game that would exist. And the problem I have next is Rabbids Rumble and Rabbids Wrestling sound like they should be the same game. So are they both real? And they've made two like
this is the question. This is the question.
Or did you make one of them up? Because Rabbids Rumble is obviously the better name than Rabbids Wrestling. So did you just improve it, or did you make a shittier
version? I was just working on Ubisoft's problems here. Trying to fix them one at a time.
Or are they both real and you made up Rabbids Coding as some like weird red herring? So I don't know. I want Rabbids Rumble to be real, and I will be very disappointed in Ubisoft if it's not and Rabbids Wrestling is real. So I'm going to say that Rabbids Wrestling is fake and say that they have a weird educational kids coding game with rabbits.
Okay. Final answer. The answer is Rabbids Wrestling is fake. Yes. You did it.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I looked it up. I was like, okay, what other games? Because I know the rabbits are like Rayman Raving Rabbids. Like, that's the original where they kind of came from. And I was just shocked there was a game called Rabbids Coding. And it is an educational game where the rabbits somehow, with their illiteracy, teach kids how to code. Because that's easier than reading, apparently. And the rabbits can't probably do either.
I'm just really sad that I dropped out of computer science to go into an English degree.
Well, if you download,
I could have learned rabbit coding.
If you could just download that game right now, you could learn coding on your own time. So think about it.
I don't need the full degree. I played rabbit coding.
All right, let's go to question two. All right, here we go. Sonic has a number of sidekicks, some of which have starred in their own games. Who can forget Sega's 2005 platformer, which I've made a typo on for anyone watching on the video format, platformer, Shadow the Hedgehog. Shadow, however, is not...
Shadow.
Whoops. Shadow is not the only side character, though, to get his game. Which of these games is not real? So again, we're looking for the false Sonic side character game. Is it A, Knuckles Adventure, B, Amy's Spelling Bee, or C, Tails Sky Patrol?
So I'm pretty sure... Okay, so Shadow the Hedgehog is the one where he's got a gun, right?
Yeah, and like a motorcycle he rides around. It's right. Really bizarre.
So really anything can go. I think Tails Sky Patrol is real. Something about that sounds familiar. And Amy's Spelling Bee... I mean, if the rabbits can have a coding game, Amy should be allowed to have a spelling game.
That's true.
That only seems fair. So I'm going to go with A, Knuckles Adventure, because I think you're trying to trip me up and trick me with Sonic Adventure Battle, and the Knuckles is actually fake.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, the final answer is Amy's Spelling Bee is incorrect. No. The other two are real. Tails Sky Patrol is an old Sega, whatever the handheld was called, N-Gage or Master, I don't remember what it was, but it's an old like side-scroller game on there. Knuckles Adventure is actually a real game. It's on the Xbox 360. I looked it up. Apparently you like, I think it's similar to like the treasure hunting thing, but you play as Knuckles, Rouge, and Espio. Isn't that bizarre?
That's bizarre.
Very strange. There was also a game called Tales Adventure, which was like a 2D RPG. I didn't put it on there because I thought like two adventure games kind of weird, but yeah, I was surprised to learn that. But you know, Sonic's weird. There's a bunch of stuff we just, you know, never heard of. Anyways, question three. This is a fun one. This is my favorite one that I made today, so I'm really appreciative of anyone that likes the little art. It's a matching question, everybody. So in Super Mario World, back on the Super Nintendo, different colored Yoshis had different abilities. Which ability corresponds with each Yoshi? And I've made another typo here. It should say which Yoshi corresponds with each ability. You can tell I was very tired when I made this the other night. So just just disregard this professionalism problem. So we have five different colored Yoshis here. We have green, yellow, blue, white, and pink. And we have five different abilities. Spitting fire, can fly, has extra speed, power ground pounds, and immune to obstacles. So which Yoshi goes with which? This is a 5-point question.
And we've got green, yellow, white, blue, and pink as the five colors. So I'm going to be embarrassed and admit that I have absolutely zero idea what any of these may do. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to go based on my intuition and how well I know color theory. So I'm going to say that green Yoshi can fly, because regular OG Yoshi, I don't believe, does any of these things. I guess he's kind of fast, but
he's
the one thing
fast.
He does, one thing he's kind of known for doing is he does his little like fluttery steps. So I'm going to say he's flying. I have this weird feeling that the blue one spits fire. Like, fire is often like not blue and the opposite of blue, but I just have a weird feeling that I can picture the blue one spitting fire. So I'm going to go with that. I think the pink one is immune to... Pink is going to have a ground pound power, because pink is kind of the closest to brown, which is earth toned.
Fair enough.
That's going to happen.
This is where the logic begins to really come into it here.
Yellow is extra speed, because if you want to go lightning fast, it would be yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, white is sort of a very like basic colored Yoshi. So he would have a basic ability where it's not active. Like, he's the lack of color, right? Like, you start with a white Yoshi and then you put a different color on him, what you want.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having an active ability, he has a passive ability, and that's immune to obstacles.
Okay, final answer. So remember your answers here. What are you? 1 out of 2 so far, right? So you're one point? Okay.
Yeah.
You have done surprisingly well on this for not knowing. I will read them to you. So the yellow one, extra speed, lightning is correct.
Yes.
Pink, extra ground pound power because it's the closest to brown. Correct. Yellow is, white is immune to obstacles. Correct. 3 points.
Yes.
However, you swapped green and blue. The green can spit fire, blue can fly. Blue like the sky, right? You can.
Blue like the sky. I should have thought about that. Yeah. You know what? I just picture green Yoshi spitting fire. It just seems like where was red
kinda
Yoshi,
weird.
I guess.
I know. But I know. He wasn't in there, I guess. They couldn't have that many colors on Super Nintendo, so they had to wait.
You know what? I will take it. I am delighted with getting 3 out of 5.
All right. This is a 7-question quiz, by the way, so we're officially at the halfway point. Okay. Question 4. Is much like Ned is Peter Parker's guy in the chair in the MCU. Futaba supports the Phantom Thieves by playing the role of Navigator. Her codename is Oracle, which is a reference to which DC character? Is it A, Barbara Gordon, B, the Flash, or C, Alfred Pennyworth?
I am disappointed that you've given me a Phantom Thief question that's not about the Phantom Thieves, because I know all about Futaba and how incredibly helpful she is in the game. But my answer, I'm not going to rethink it. I'm going to go straight for Barbara Gordon, option A, because that is the commissioner's daughter, and he's the guy that puts like the bat signal up, and that is kind of like the heraldry of... like, it's like a beacon, which is like an oracle. And I just don't know how the Flash or Alfred would be related. So I'm going to go A, Barbara Gordon.
Kate, you are on a roll today, because Barbara Gordon is correct. However, That's a really interesting connection you've made, because the reason I found on this trivia website that I used is because Barbara Gordon, I guess, in her DC lore, becomes a character also named Oracle. She gets injured, and then I guess she has like this worldwide network of information and can like give info to different people on the good guys team. So it's actually kind of like even more a reference than you thought. But I guess it's doubly connected. And they both have orange hair and like a similar look, I guess, too. So I guess she might have been really influenced by this character from the DC universe. I want to research that now and see if there was a connection.
Yeah. That is interesting. I've never heard that, but it's interesting that it's intentional, or if it's just sort of like coincidental and they've got a lot in common. But
really lines up. Anyway, question five. We got a few more to go. So Fox McCloud is the captain of Team Star Fox and fights alongside his squadron that includes Falco Lombardi, Slippy Toad, and Peppy Hare. Their arch rivals, Team Star Wolf, is captained by none other than Star Wolf.
That checks out.
Which checks out. Which of the following pilots is not a member of Team Star Wolf's squadron? Is it A, Leon Powalski, B, Pygma Dengar, C, Cash Bowman, or D, Andrew Oikani? And here I am testing your knowledge of the N64 classic, Star Fox 64. Because when their pictures little pop up, you've seen pictures of all these real ones before.
Are they actually in Star Fox 64?
They are. Because you know when you get in those levels where you fight Fox? Yeah. His guys pop up on the little communicator too, and you can see their little faces chattering around.
I don't feel like I've ever heard of any of these characters. Like, the Star Fox team, I'm super on board with. Like, grade two, I wrote a Star Fox novel based on the game. Like, I know these guys. Let me tell you, the bad guys were very limited in that novel because I did not know about any of them. So, these are also great. By the way, I gotta say, like, you know that bad translated baseball game where they, like, tried to make up,
Bob Gonzalez. Todd Gonzalez.
These guys could fit in that baseball game, no problem.
Totally.
Okay, Cash Bowman is my favorite, or Dash Bowman's my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm between him and Andrew Oinkany, although he could be a pig, so that fits the animal theme. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's safe. I'm going to go with Dash Bowman. Like, it's just a little bit too, like, almost a real name.
I see. Okay. Dash Bowman. Letter C. You are correct. Dash Bowman is correct. I made that up. You're right. I couldn't quite quite match the level of naming expertise the rest of these. I strongly encourage, after we do this podcast, you Google what these guys look like, because you're going to have some intense flashbacks of, like, I do remember these guys. Leon is like that gecko type guy, like a chameleon. And then Pygma is a pig, obviously. And Andrew's some monkey guy. I actually forgot about him, but it was kind of cool looking them up, because I totally forgot to.
I remember the gecko guy. Yep, I've looked him up. Leon.
I gunned him down many times.
Dengar. Okay, he's a pig. And is Oinkany also a pig?
No, he's a monkey. Or no, is he a boar, maybe? I don't know.
I don't know. Him I don't recognize too much, but it makes sense. He's kind of Androssy, so...
Androssy. All right, question six. We got two more to go. This is a true or false question. True or false, the weighted companion cube in Portal is sentient.
This is tricky, because I'm pretty sure, unless I've made it a lot darker in my mind, I'm pretty sure, aren't there, like, dead people inside the companion cubes?
Well, I'm not going to answer that question.
That would be unhelpful, but I'm pretty sure that's the case. So there's people in them, but I don't know if they're sentient, because I think the people were killed first. They were, like, old test subjects or something, and then put in the cubes. That might be right, or I've just made it, like,
considerably. You just made Portal way darker than it needs to be.
Right? I'm going to say that no, they are not, but they do have that tragic story. But they're not sentient. They are dead already.
All right. Well, you are incorrect. Apparently it's true. I looked it up, and apparently the lore is that they're sentient in the same way that the turrets and stuff are. Like, they kind of notice you and have that little bit of roboticism, but the difference with the cube is it just doesn't have any movable parts or, like, audible parts. But apparently it does have sort of a sentient being, and it really is a companion to you. So that's what I heard. You can fact check if you want, but I think that's what I saw.
So. That's nicer than what I went for. I hope we're both not true and they're not sentient, but also filled with dead people.
I hope you're right. Okay, finally, last question. This is a fill in the blank question. As well as being the only playable prosecutor in the Ace Attorney series to date, Edgeworth is the only prosecutor so far to have voice clips for Take That. In fact, he and Blank are the only protagonists in the series who are not defense attorneys. And I know you haven't played all the Phoenix Wright games, but I know you do know this information or have a reasonable ability to guess it. So I think this is a fair question. I'm interested to see what you come up with.
I know this one. I know there's a second spin-off game, but who is it? Okay. I don't think you play as one of the Fae girls. I don't think that's true. I don't know if you play as Gumshoes, but I really want you to. Edgeworth? You definitely play as Edgeworth. Oh, I feel like the second you tell me, I'm going to be kicking myself on this one.
I think you might a little bit. Apollo? No, he's a defense attorney.
He's a defense attorney, yeah. Who else is in there? You don't play as the German girl with the whip. Von Karma.
Francesca Von Karma.
I don't think you get to play as Larry Butts because nobody wants to. That would
be amazing. It could be a spinoff, Larry Butts Bottle Depot Simulator.
It's just a series of different minigames because he's one of those characters that would just like perpetually like lose his jaw after a week of being there. So it's like, okay, now you're on like the front line at Tim Hortons. And then it's like, okay, now you're collecting bottles. Like, all right, now you're like in the daycare for a couple days. Don't ever let Larry Butts look after your kids, though.
No, don't. No. Don't do that.
I feel like I have to go with Gumshoes is the only like, kind of big character I can think of. He's a cop. And I know that's wrong. And it's not Layton because that's not the same game. It's just this crossover. There's another spin-off game. They have their own game, right? Like it is, or is it?
I'm going to answer this question. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to go with Gumshoes just for the sake of not sitting here for 20 minutes, but I hate it.
Well, I'm sorry. I think I might have made this a little bit weird in the wording. The answer is correct. Is Herschel Layton, guest protagonist from the crossover game Phoenix Wright and what's it called? Professor Layton, of course. He was the protagonist, the only other playable protagonist that was not a defense attorney. So a little bit of a trick question there at the end, but I like that one, and I just thought it was really cool Edgeworth was the only one in the series to have a Take That recording, but I couldn't figure out how to make that a question, so I had to change it up. You could get a half point. You didn't mention it. I could be lenient. You got a lot of points this quiz. You've done really well. You've proven that you deserve the leniency on this quiz. Speaking of which, how many points do you have?
So I think this is the best I've ever done on one of these quizzes. So what's 1, 2... five,
you get three on the Yoshis.
Six and a half points, wow. I believe.
Pretty good. 6.5 out of whatever that was. That's very good. Like we said, let us know below in the comments of YouTube channel if you did better than that. Because I think it would be pretty hard to do better than that. I mean, depending. It's always so hard because if you've played those games, like if you played Super Mario World, you're going to get those Yoshis right. You know what I mean? It becomes too easy. Okay, Kate, let's get the show wrapped up here. We got one last thing to do, which is, of course, listener mail, where you can write in any week you want just to get your question read on the show, just like Kate did today. You can do so to cloudcontrolpod@proton.me or get in touch with us on Twitter, where we love to answer your questions. So thank you for writing in. And Kate, what's our question for today?
So this, I really like this one. It is, what is your favorite format for game perspective, such as first person, third person, etc.? And how does it affect the game experience and playability? Do you want to start off?
Yeah. I thought this was interesting because at first I was like, oh, it top down, because I love those time of like those like indie games where you're sort of that top down perspective, sort of like the My Hero, Dodgeball Hero, or like Paper Mario, those style RPGs. But you know, the more I thought about it, it's got to be third person, right? Like behind the back camera. It's just so versatile. I love the way that you can see the characters' animations. Like, if you're playing a lot of times, the main character of the game is like the star of the show, and you don't get to see their animations half the time if you're in first person. I just think third person is the way to go, especially for like any kind of game with collectibles or costumes or different weapons you can equip that changes your outlook. Like, I just love to be able to see that type of customization. And I think it also lines up with like the games that I like also just tend to use that style a lot of the time, like God of War is third person. We just talked about Hi-Fi Rush, that third person. Like, even Persona, which is an RPG, is a third person game. I think it just tends to be the default, and it's very common these days. I think it's just the easy answer, to be honest, but I can't think of another that's really better, for me at least.
Yeah, I'm right on the third person train. Obviously, like, looking back on all those games you mentioned, I would be remiss to not mention any Souls game is third mm-hmm. person.
Could you imagine Souls in first person?
No, it would not work. It would totally not work. But yeah, I think like The Last of Us, you get stuff like Plague Tale. You're just starting, and I think what kind of clicked for me after I was kind of listing off those games in third person for me is that I tend to really enjoy story-based games where you are a set character. Mm-hmm. I much prefer to play God of War and be Kratos and following Kratos's story, or like following Amicia in Hugo in Plague Tale, or following Amicia. Like John Marston.
Amicia.
Take a shot every time James has to do Hugo's voice.
I whenever Plague Tale comes. I can't not do it. I do it on the couch when I'm playing the game by myself. Sometimes. I don't know what it is incredible. About that kid. He just makes me want to talk in his voice. That's all I can say.
It's because he is absolutely delightful and was best character of the year. So shout out to Hugo.
I don't know about that. I don't know. We'll talk about it later.
But anyway, so all of those things kind of have in common in the sense of like, I like when I've got the story of a character that I'm following. And the main difference between, I think, first and third person is first person kind of hides the character from you. And I think it is a little bit more of an emulation of you're putting yourself in the shoes of the character, you know, like you get a lot of silent protagonists like Link. Like, I know Link's third person too, but you get those kind of like, you know, in Oblivion and like Skyrim, and it's like, build your character, like, who do you want them to be? And like, they're you now. And like you said, like, you get a bit less of their animations. They tend to just have a little bit less to personality to grasp onto. Whereas in third person, you see everything that they're doing. You still get the same kind of like action potential, but it's maybe a little mm-hmm. bit more of my style, where there's a little more positioning involved instead of just, you know, shooting spells and stuff. Like, maybe that's productive, but I just think the third person lends a lot more character to mm-hmm. whomever you're playing as. And that's typically what I like to go for, is the character kind of comes first.
Yeah, so. I agree. And it's not like there's not exceptions too. Like, I think of a game like mm-hmm. BioShock, where you are playing a set character, yeah. and the fact that it is in first person and you can kind of look at what these augments are doing mm-hmm. to your hands, like, that game wouldn't be the same in third person. And they did yeah. a really good job of utilizing that difference to make that game really focused on the character in a different way. But I agree with you. I'm thinking of another game too, like Dead Space wouldn't be as impactful in first person, because although it might be a little scarier to encounter some of those jump scares, I guess, if you didn't have the third person camera, I think about how Dead Space is able to leverage and put all that information about your character's mm. health and his ammo and everything on Isaac's back. And that's another element where you just can't really do that in first person unless you have the character, like, you know, constantly looking at their arm, which can also work. Mm-hmm. But something about that sort of integrated perspective you can get with different things in third person, I think, is also very cool. Of course, there's a way to do that in first person too. You can have like a HUD and an Iron Man suit, or like in Destiny or something, but I really like the way they do that in Dead Space, and other games do it too. Of course, I'm blanking on the top of my head what those are, but or like, I know there's certain guns in Halo, for example, that you, as you're holding it, you can see like your ammo count on the side, and I guess that's something different that I guess it could be done yeah. in first person, but you know what I'm trying to say. There's some cool ways you can play with it.
I mean, that's just the thing, right? It's like, every perspective has its benefits and weaknesses yeah. and ways that games have taken advantage of it. And like, I would be extremely disappointed if I was locked into one exclusively, right? Like, you know, I'm so excited to play a game like Tunic, right? Which is that's top down, and like, you know, turn-based strategy yeah. games would suck in third person.
Oh my god. Could you imagine playing like, actually, have you ever played, is it Valkyria Chronicles or something? It's like that, there, it is an RTS, but you can like zoom in and go into first person or something with your characters.
It is very bizarre. Weird. It's very bizarre, very feel to it. But yeah, I think this is neat. It kind of makes you think a little bit, but I think when it comes down to it, a big difference with third person too is you get the side characters with you. Like in a first person game in like BioShock, you're always on your own or you're on the voice recorder, right? Like you can't have another character with you.
Well, you can. With third person, you can.
Yeah, but
like
not
in Call of Duty, I think about playing like Modern Warfare 2 and you're infiltrating that ship and there's the guys around, but you have to look over at them. You can't just see them at any time.
Yeah, exactly.
So maybe you feel like a little bit more isolated. Or you lose where they are or something.
It's slightly less intimate than something like Kratos and Atreus, like always being on screen together and really hammering in that like bond that they have. So
yeah, well, because in the first person, you wouldn't be able to get the facial expressions of Kratos or the person you're talking to. Like that's another thing about first person that I don't like is oftentimes, unless it's like the cream of the crop, you know, sometimes the lip sync isn't super great, and you just have that kind of like, you're staring at their face if you're in first person. And unless it looks really good, it can be kind of funny, like in some of those older Mass Effects and whatever, where they're all really
like
stiff.
Oblivion, where it like,
or like
zooms
Oblivion. Yeah, like third person, I think, hides a lot of those. Yeah, third person hides a lot of those inefficiencies in terms of like technical, like face capture and stuff, because you're not quite right in their grill all the time and like looking up their nose when they're trying to tell you how many rats to go kill around the corner or something, you know?
Don't come back till you've killed 12.
Exactly. Yeah. Anyway, good question. Thanks for the question, Kay. And like we said at the top of the segment, if you'd like to write in, please do so. We answer a listener mail question every week, and we absolutely love to do it. It's very fun. But for now, I think that's going to end the podcast. So thank you all very much for listening. We're about to go watch the next episode of The Last of Us and record another podcast very soon and talk all about that. So until we get back, hope you all have a wonderful day. Thank you all for listening. And remember, this has been Cloud Control. The gaming podcast is not just good. It's good enough, and we'll see you on the next episode.